Well, the fires that have engulfed the Amazon rainforest, the largest land-based carbon sink on the planet, remind us of the fragility of our ecosystem and the importance of looking to other carbon stores. The ocean's role in halting climate change has never been more clear. But did you know that a simple submarine plant captures carbon at up to 35 times faster than tropical rainforests? The plant is seagrass, but it too has suffered a steep decline in recent decades caused by pollution, runoff from the land, coastal development and damage from boat propellers, with up to 92% of seagrass having disappeared in UK waters alone in the last century. Well, one project is looking to reverse this decline. Sky Ocean Rescue, the World Wildlife Fund and Swansea University are together launching the biggest seagrass restoration project ever undertaken in the UK. Well, Dr. Jenny Oates is UK Sea Programme Manager with the WWF and is in Cardiff. Jenny, welcome to the programme.
Hello there.
What can you tell me about seagrass?
Yes, well, seagrass is really a wonder plant. So it's a flowering plant that grows under the sea, forming underwater meadows, which are absolutely full of life. So seagrass provides a habitat for animals like seahorses and pipefish, which are a kind of fish that's closely related to seahorses, and they hide in the fronds of the seagrass with their long bodies. It's also a home for animals like crabs and baby cuttlefish. And importantly, seagrass provides a nursery habitat for young fish that we like to eat, so species like plaice and cod. And seagrass can actually provide a home for 40 times more animals than bare sand alone. So it's really important as a place for marine wildlife to live. But also, really importantly, seagrass is really great at capturing carbon. So it can capture carbon at a rate 35 times faster than tropical forests and store it in its roots and sediments. So this is another reason why seagrass is really an amazing plant.
And what distinguishes it from seaweed?
So it's a different kind of plant from seaweed. It's a flowering plant and it has bright green leaves. And the seagrass seeds grow in these in the long blades of the grass. And these are the parts that we can harvest in order to be able to collect them.
Why has it declined so much, Jenny?
Well, seagrass is under threat from issues like poor water quality, so runoff from the land, from human pollution and agricultural runoff. It also gets damaged by boats from their propellers and anchoring, and some kinds of fishing can cause damage to seagrass too. And also, in the past, coastal development has been a big issue, clearing areas of seagrass beds. So it's actually declined by up to 92% in the UK in the last century. And globally, we lose an area the same size as two football pitches every hour. So really, governments haven't been doing enough to protect the seagrass that we have.
Of course, it grows in very shallow water because it needs light, and light, the proper rays of light for photosynthesis can't penetrate very far. So you're looking at really the first 10 metres of water where your seagrass will actually grow. So it's obviously very close to the coast, very close to where pollutants and everything else come out.
Exactly. And that's the reason why it's so vulnerable, really, to runoff from the land. And particularly if there's issues with the water quality, it means that the light can't get through to the leaves of the plant and so it can't grow properly.
We have a seagrass in Dublin. In Malahide Estuary, there's one, Zostra augustifolia. There is said to be a clump of it on the Bull Island, but I have never seen it. Now, if you read about Brent geese, for instance, it's said that back in the 20s and 30s, there was ample Zostra around, and the geese feed on this. Why should it be such an enormous decline in a few decades? I mean, well, the pollution hasn't increased that much after all, and boats aren't tearing it apart. It seems an extraordinary collapse. Can you explain that?
Yeah, well, I think governments haven't necessarily always been aware about the extent of the decline of seagrass. So I think it's an issue that's gone unnoticed for quite some time. I think people are starting to realise the importance now, and it's not too late to start protecting it. But we really need to act now to protect the seagrass that we have.
But presumably, if people inadvertently are damaging it, we would actually need to survey where it is, designate these areas as protected, so people with boats and that will have routes out and in, so that they're not willy-nilly going through unknown beds because they don't know they're there.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's a combination of both, really. So we need to make sure that we protect the seagrass beds that we already have and make sure that the government does this effectively. But also, if we're working to restore areas of seagrass beds, we need to make sure that those areas that are restored have the proper management in place to protect them.
Why should it be such a good carbon storage plant? I mean, where is the carbon actually going? I mean, there aren't massive tree trunks at the end or huge roots running through the, as there would be, say, in the rainforest or something like that. Where is this carbon going and how does it come to be locked in the seabed?
Well, it's really interesting. So the seagrass, the blades of grass absorb the carbon dioxide from the water. And then they store this into the seagrass roots, but also the seabed sediments. So it's not actually just stored in the plant itself, it's actually going into the seabed. So this is a really different way of actually capturing carbon, and it can be really fast. So I think I mentioned earlier, it's about 35 times faster than the rate of a tropical forest. So it's a really important means of capturing large volumes of carbon.
So when the seagrass then dies, it being a plant, I mean, it hasn't got timber or anything in it, the actual plant itself might die, but the carbon stored in the sediments will last even if the grass is gone.
Exactly, and that's why it's a really important way of capturing carbon.
So, I mean, the areas where the seagrass was and no longer is, are the sediments still in the seabed underneath that, or have they gone too?
I guess that previously when those seagrass beds were in existence, they were capturing the carbon and that will still be stored. But in those areas where we no longer have the seagrass or we have much less than we used to, we're not able to have that active carbon capturing still continuing. And that's what we really want to see restored so that we can continue to have this function of capturing more carbon over time.
Will this alleviate the reduction of the Amazon rainforest, or are we comparing David and Goliath here? In fact, given that you can only have 0.2% of the seabed as suitable terrain for this, because it has to be in very shallow waters, I mean, is that area anything comparable to what a rainforest in the Amazon might hold?
Well, it's a pretty small area that is possible to do to restore seagrass, but the amount of carbon that it can capture is huge. So you can restore a fairly small area. So the kinds of areas we're looking at for this pilot project is only around 2 hectares. But that can capture a huge amount of carbon because of the high rates at which it can be stored by the seagrass. So we don't necessarily have to restore huge areas for the volume of carbon that can be captured. So the ocean's role in halting climate change is actually becoming much, much more important.
I think the important thing you're talking about here, Jenny, is this stability that one's restoring. Because if you think of a mobile sand beach, it's very unstable. It gets washed around and moved. If you have an existing seagrass bed, it mats it all together. The geese may be here browsing it in the winter, but in the summer, it's able to grow and develop all its rhizomes. The real problem for an eelgrass is it finds it incredibly difficult to establish a new stable bed. And your project of, you know, literally pinning down little seedlings in Hessian sacks will be, you know, a revelation to a method, a means by which we can restore Zostera seabeds here, because they will go quite deep underwater, but the point is they stabilize the sand and all of that carbon, the rhizomes, the whole ecosystem then becomes stabilized and it is resistant to being damaged by erosion.
Dr. Jenny Oates, UKC's Programme Manager with the WWF, thank you for joining us on Mooney Goes Wild. And that is our programme for today. My special thanks to Aineen Ilana, to Dr. Richard Collins, and to Matthew Jebb, the Director of the National Botanic Gardens in Dublin. Thanks to Sheila Neveal on sound, broadcast coordinator Jarlath Holland, the researcher John Riley, our producer is Sheila O'Callaghan. And the programme is back tomorrow evening at 10 o'clock. And indeed, Derek will be back with you as well next week too. From me, Michael Cummin, thanks for listening.